mbeinstitute.org website. To find out about the founding of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, which was founded in 1988 by William and Helen Wright, please navigate to the menu, which is in the top left corner of every page, and select About, which is near the bottom of the menu. If you would like to contact us in a private, secure manner, please send a message, which is obtained from clicking on the Contact button, which is next to the About selection at the bottom area of the menu. This is the end of the pre-recorded introduction to the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, the website, and the method of communication. We now begin the extemporaneous prayer treatment on the topic of debit and credit. Recently, I noticed a quote that said, "The only thing you can take with you when you pass on is what you have given away." One could think about a credit in a variety of ways, one of which is credit you give to someone else for something they have shared with the public. For example, if you quote someone and list their name with the quotation. Another way it's used is if one has a debt to someone and they make a payment toward the debt, then they are given credit for the payment, which reduces the debt. And the debt is defined as a debit. There was no thought when I read that short quote a few days ago that I would ever use it, or I would have been more alert to noticing if there was a name of which it was given credit to, so it could be repeated now. But after thinking about it a day or two later, I realized that there really was a very special spiritual thought that could be attached to the intention of the writer. In referring to Wikipedia, it states this about Andrew Carnegie. November 1835 to August 1919. A Scottish-American industrialist and philanthropist, Carnegie led the expansion of the American steel industry in the late 19th century and became one of the richest Americans in history. He became a leading philanthropist in the United States, Great Britain, and the British Empire. During the last 18 years of his life, he gave away around $350 million, equivalent to $10.9 billion in 2024 dollars. He gave away almost 90% of his fortune to charities, foundations, and universities. His 1889 article proclaiming the gospel of wealth called on the rich to use their wealth to improve society, expressed support for progressive taxation and an estate tax, and stimulated a wave of philanthropy. If one has an asset, for example, cash or a house or land or anything of which a dollar value can be attributed, it could even be intellectual property, it could be anything that one consider that they own. If one considers a debt that they must pay, it is considered a credit or a liability. It is the opposite, and it is what one owes. Elevating thought to a spiritual basis, think about a debit as something one has and has not given away, and a credit as something that one has given away. One time, when Jesus and his disciples were together, Jesus observed that a woman had given 2 mites as a contribution to the synagogue. He stated that she had given away more than anyone else, and yet 2 mites is equivalent in today's dollars to 1 penny. And he said that she gave away more than all others because she gave all she had. She therefore deducted from her debits everything and added to her credits everything. So the only thing that she had in her spiritual record of wealth were credits. One might think about what one could take with them as something of lasting value. Does it make sense that we would want to have something of lasting value while we're alive, instead of only being concerned about it after we are no longer so-called alive in material form? What debits did Jesus have? It's been stated that all he had were the clothes that he was wearing. And he specifically stated, "I don't even have a place on which to rest my head at night." His entire ministry is highlighted by a life of giving. He devoted his waking hours to giving, looking after the well-being of others, and in an atmosphere of love. When his disciples asked him how many times they should forgive, they suggested 7. And Jesus said 70 times 7. It is reasonable to estimate that what he was telling them was, don't even think about not forgiving. Always forgive. And of course, the easiest way to do that is to never condemn. Francis Fluneau was one of Mary Baker Eddy's early students and lecturers, and one of his articles was titled Criticism. And in it, he states that criticism is the source of all evil, and it will prevent someone from making any progress whatsoever. Mary Baker Eddy made the statement that she prays every hour to guard her thought and make sure that she is not condemning anyone, but only looking for good in everyone and everything in her consciousness. If one thinks about a problem that occurs, one could convert that to thinking about it being an opportunity. That would be an example of looking for the good in something that appears to be something that is discordant. That would be giving the benefit to the positive side. It is giving your consciousness an opportunity to make something constructive out of what otherwise appears to be very negative. Mary Baker Eddy begins the chapter on Christian Science practice with the story of Mary Magdalene. What did Jesus express to her? And what did she express to Jesus? Love. What did Jesus express when he washed his disciples' feet? Love. His emphasis on humility enabled him to make that expression of love. How many wars could there be if everyone was thinking about giving? It has been deemed that every single war was a result of there being an effort to take from someone else. The dedicated effort to defeat Russia is to confiscate the largest amount of assets of any country in the world. In fact, it is almost double the size of the one that has the second largest amount of assets. Even right now, Europe has publicly stated that they could bail themselves out of bankruptcy if they could only get their hands on the assets of Russia, and therefore are very intent on absolutely having a war with Russia to the very end of their breath, expecting that they will be saved from their foolish ways by stealing from someone else. Even in old Western movies, where it shows one group being bank robbers, and of course the others are the good guys that go after them, the bank robbers are always looking for one last theft so that they can stop being a thief. They are stealing all the time, but yet they never have anything. These old Westerns, some of which are very comical, could be used as a reminder on exactly how one gains or loses depending on the character that they are expressing when they gain something. And what should they do when they gain something? They should share it, give it away, help someone else. So often, when one does give something away, they relish a big thank you. Or, in the case of Andrew Carnegie, even though he was a very generous man, his name is peppered all over the areas where he gave away his money, or gave away what his money did. His name is on the libraries. Mary Baker Eddy, on the other hand, did not want credit for science and health, but she stated that she was a scribe under orders. She purposely did not copyright it because she wanted to leave the door open for the future. However, she does make a very exact statement that if one uses what came from another person, it's very important in the name of honesty to give credit to the individual from where they got the information. The church that she left behind when she left removed her photograph and reprinted the book within 24 hours of the day that she passed on. It appears that if she wanted her picture removed, she would have done that herself. The church also destroyed all of the monuments that were placed throughout New England in her honor. The effort was to separate the discoverer and the discovery. An act of theft. if one does it, doesn't seem like it's possible for there to be anything gained from the work that was done. It would be like robbing a bank. They're always looking for one last opportunity so they can retire, it never recurring to them that they could stop their evil ways and start building something in an honest way anytime. And abide by what Isaiah tells us. Precept upon precept. Precept upon precept. Line upon line. Line upon line. Here a little and there a little. It is clear from any study of Jesus that he represented love. The same is true of any thorough study of Mary Baker Eddy. They were both attacked all the time, and yet they didn't respond with resentment, but with love, tolerance, patience, and persevering in love. Frederick L. Rawson, one of the finest Christian Scientists, stated that we should devote our life to making other people happy. And he states that as our purpose for being on planet Earth. His life was definitely a life of giving. What about the children of Israel? They were instructed by God not to even save enough for tomorrow, but have the confidence to trust God to provide for them on a daily basis. There's a story about a man that had three sons, and he was maturing to the point that he felt he should give away his assets to his sons. He had land, he had a house, and a very unique library in the home. He wanted them all to be happy, and he was hoping that each one of them would not choose something that another one desired to have. He wanted to keep everything secret, and so he asked each one of them to write down what they would prefer having of the three items, and to have clear in their thought the reason. So they all got together, gave their papers to their father, and so he opened them one at a time, and they discussed it. The first one said he would like to have the home. And he said the reason was that he enjoyed socializing with his friends, and he said it's a lovely home and a good place to carry on parties and so forth. And in the meantime, he would have a place to stay and live and always have a place to sleep at night. With that, he opened up the second request, and it was for the land. And his son said, I want the land because a house can burn down. Someone can confiscate it. You could have any kind of destruction could happen to it. It's always going to require maintenance. I don't want it. I want the land. It doesn't take anything to maintain. It will always be there. So it was getting very interesting at this point, because now it was down to one individual that was going to be making the decision on whether or not the father would have to sell something and give them cash, or whether or not they would each end up with what they desired. Believe it or not, the third one wanted the library, and he was the youngest son. And so when his father asked him, "Son, why do you want the library?" He said, "I'm going to read and study everything in there, and no one can take that away from me. I will have gained knowledge about all of the wonderful writers, and that will always be a benefit to me." He used the most intelligence. Even the one with the land apparently didn't realize that the land could be taken over just like the house by someone that it did not belong to. Are we going to be wise and decide on something that we can learn from and always benefit us in our daily experience? Or are we going to look for some kind of a material possession because it makes us feel good or look good, or we can have a lot of fun with it? Do we want a debit? Do we think that's going to improve our spiritual balance of wealth? Or do we want a credit that is everlasting? Do we want to take, which gives us a debit? Or do we want to give, which gives us a credit? We emphasize in the website very often in our prayer treatments that a life of giving is an attitude that is required for successful healing. What is the golden rule all about? Is it about taking or giving? It talks about the other person first. Do unto others. And then, as you would want others to do unto you. It is giving. One of the more successful writers receives millions of dollars every time he writes a book. I saw a movie. It was intended to be a documentary about his life. And it showed his attitude about receiving the millions of dollars. He immediately went to work to give it away. He lived in a very modest home in the northeastern part of the U.S. And there's a lot of remote areas there in New England states. The further away you get away from the big metropolitan areas of New York, for example, and go up into New Hampshire and Maine. He was very happy there because it enabled him to have the solitude with his wife so that he could think and not be interfered with by the hustle and bustle of large metropolitan areas. And it showed one time when he was making a call to a university. Well, actually, it was when they called back, because what he did is he apparently said, "I'm looking to make a contribution," and he apparently put some stipulation on it of how the money was to be used. And so they did not give an immediate answer, and they had to have a conference about it, and they were calling back to report their decision. And he hung up the phone and told his wife. He said, "Guess what? We were able to give it away." He was so pleased that they accepted whatever conditions he put on it, so that he didn't have to be burdened with having a large sum of money. Imagine if everyone became gleeful when they were giving something away, and whoever received it was very happy. Could we possibly have war under that kind of a circumstance? Could we have any strong disagreements? Dale Carnegie wrote some books on how to be successful. And in one of the books he said, never make a strong opinion about something, because tomorrow you may have changed your mind and reverse what you said the previous day. You could have gained information that you didn't have the day before, or you may have rethought your approach. Whatever it is, he said, never make a strong opinion about anything. Albert Einstein said curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. If you take that approach, you would not make a strong opinion about anything. You would always leave the door open for further revelation. How easy it is to let ego, self-will, anything negative, to be an influence on our actions. And how diligent we must be in order to negate that kind of influence. If we remember, there's only one communicator and only one way of communicating, God does the communication through His laws. And it's one way. It's not two ways. We can't change His laws. It doesn't do any good to tell God that we need something, and why is He overlooking our need? We need to check our thought. What is it we think we're lacking? Did God give us the laws of the universe and have some holes in there of things He forgot about? The very first few words of Genesis 1, it states in the beginning. Mary Baker Eddy translates that to mean, in spiritual sense, in the only. Genesis 1 is talking about truth. Truth is not new. It has always been true Whatever is true has always been true. So there is no beginning or end with truth. It's like a circle versus a straight line. The circle represents truth, no beginning and no end. A straight line has both a beginning and an end, and is finite, not infinite like the circle, the symbol of the circle. Verse 26, I believe it is, in Genesis chapter 1, says, "And let us make man after our image and after our likeness." And then it says, God made man after his image and after his likeness. So the first thing says, open your consciousness. Knock, knock. I'm knocking at your door of consciousness. Are you going to let me in? One of the commonly enjoyed paintings of Jesus is him knocking on a door. Knocking on our door of consciousness. Are we going to open it? Are we going to let the God qualities that Jesus expressed be a part of us? Are we going to let that be all of us? Are we going to live those qualities? The Bible says, pray without ceasing. The only way it seems that anyone can pray without ceasing is to be living their prayer. And what should the prayer be of everyone? Mary Baker Eddy begins Science and Health with three quotes. The first are the words of Jesus from John, in the Gospel of John, and it states, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The second one says, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so," from Shakespeare. And the third one is from Mary Baker Eddy. "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed." That is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere. How does God hear our prayer? Does God have ears? When we tell God we need something, does he hear what we say? Shouldn't we be thinking that God is already complete? And what we have to do is find where we are deficient in the way we're living our life, which is really all thought, speech, and action about us, so that we can correct what we're doing wrong. Where is our thinking wrong? What do we lack in our thinking? Are we lacking love? Are we thinking that God is not whole and therefore we have something missing? Did we make a stupid mistake, so we're missing intelligence? Whatever it is we think we're missing, we can shore it up. Do we think we don't have enough time to get everything done? Have we studied time management? Did we not accomplish something we really wanted to accomplish that we could consider a goal? Have we studied goal management? Richard Strain was at the bottom of his rope, the end of his rope. He didn't know what to do to solve the problem. He was working 18 hours a day. He only had 6 hours to get home, eat, rest, get his food ready for the next day and eat breakfast, and out the door. And it was the same every day. He was stuck in a rut. So he asked the practitioner to solve his problem. He said, "I don't know what to do." She said, "Well, how much are you studying?" "I don't have any time to study." She said, "If you're not studying 5 hours a day, you're not going to make any spiritual progress." Wow. That hit him right between the eyes. How in the world am I going to study any, let alone 5 hours a day? That only leaves 1 hour to do everything that I'm taking 6 hours to do. And then when I get up, I'm not even fresh. And I have to start all over. She didn't say another word. She just said, "How much are you studying?" As a part of that, when she said, "If you're not studying 5 hours a day, you're not gonna get anywhere." After contemplating it, he said, "Okay, I'm gonna do it." He was probably thinking to himself, he had no idea on how he was gonna do it, but he had no choice. He didn't have any other way to look for a solution. In his mind, Christian Science had to be the answer, but how does he do it? He made the commitment. And he reported back that at the end of 1 week, his schedule had improved so much and he got so much more done. He did not have a problem devoting 5 hours a day to study. After some period of time, he became a very popular speaker at Christian Science churches. So it went from hardly having time to breathe to having time to travel around and speak at churches. We give the complete method on how to study to get the most out of your study time and make the most progress. In fact, we even state that if you follow what we recommend, that you'll be able to heal anything. Any problem that comes up, you will be able to heal. Do we want to cultivate that kind of a life? Or do we just want to be in a rut, going around in circles, making no progress? Always feeling we're lacking something. Wentworth Winslow, another great Christian Scientist, wrote an article about a man going to heaven to knock on the door to talk to God. He was desperate. And an angel answered the door and said, "How can I help you?" So he told his woes, that he was missing this and missing that and so forth. His life was just being destroyed in front of his very eyes. And the angel said, "Just a minute." And the angel went to talk to God. And God said, "Give him anything he wants and as much as he wants of it." And the angel said, "But God, we don't have anything that he wants. He wants us to replace something that he's missing. And we don't have anything that can be missing anything. Everything we have is complete, and it remains complete all the time. It can never be depleted. So we can't give him. We can't replace what he had." And God said, "Well, offer to him what we have, and he can have as much of it as he wants." He was looking for replacing something that had been depleted instead of looking for something that could not be depleted. He was looking for money or a house or a car or a job or a wife or a husband or a family or a business. Something that had a material aspect to it that could be depleted, instead of looking for God's qualities of intelligence or wisdom, capability, functionality, facility. How about substance made of spirit instead of matter? How about spiritual senses instead of material senses? In other words, instead of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling coming from material organs, to have them come from the realization that the only substance is spirit, and therefore the only senses are spiritual. Therefore, instead of looking for an organ to be replaced or repaired to give better vision, that we think about doing a better job of discerning, which means deciding the difference between one thing and another. And in this case, we're talking about the difference between right and wrong, spirit and matter, immortal mind versus mortal mind, eternal life versus a material life of sensation, principle based on a spiritual foundation instead of self-will, truth based on the truth about who God is and man and the relationship between God and man, and love not being something sensuous that can come and go in a very short period of time, but something that is a life of giving continuously that never wanes, does not permit any dilution, diversion, deflection, stoppage or reversal, but just continues on. It's like forgiving, not 7 times, but 70 times 7. In other words, don't condemn in the first place. Mary Baker Eddy wrote an article in Unity of Good that says, love your enemies. She says, who is thine enemy except someone that you have formulated in thought that is your enemy. It's like, how many times are you going to forgive? Why are you going to assign evil to an individual in the beginning? Shakespeare tells us, nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. The second quote that was recited earlier. Are we going to think evil or good? Are we going to stop every hour like Mary Baker Eddy did to make sure that her thought was always on only seeing good about everything? There's a story about a good and a bad gardener. They live next door in these large estates, taking care of their respective gardens. And every once in a while, the good gardener would go out and find a hole where he had a beautiful plant the night before. And one time, a friend was visiting him and went out in the beginning of the day to see his garden. And sure enough, that was one of the times that something was missing. And so he asked him, well, you have really a beautiful garden here. What happened here? Did it get dark early on you or what? And he said, no, my best friend needed that plant. So he took it. Or I think he said he must have taken it last night. And he said, why do you call him your best friend? Because he reminds me of the wrong way to be acting. It's an alert to me to watch my thought. Watch what I think, say, and do. Am I doing the right thing all the time? Am I loving my neighbor as myself? When Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? He said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. He's giving us the message that we can't love God unless we love our neighbor. You cannot do one without the other. We all have one Father, Mother, God. In the Lord's Prayer, Mary Baker Eddy interprets the spiritual sense of the first verse. Jesus' word says, our Father, which art in heaven. Mary Baker Eddy gives us a spiritual sense as saying, our Father, Mother, God. All harmonious. In other words, God gives us all the qualities which are normally attributed to a man and a woman. So he's our father and our mother. The strength and courage and so forth of a man, and the kindness and tenderness and nurturing of a mother. And Jesus said, our Father which art in heaven. And Mary Baker Eddy is telling us that heaven is whenever there's harmony. If we have harmony with anything that we're involved in, we're in heaven. We are living in heaven when we see, promote, and experience harmony. If we think we are lacking something, we should start giving away. We need to change our vision. There was a man with 6 children and his wife living in a one room. facility. And they complained to their pastor. And he says, I'll be over this afternoon to your home and we'll solve everything. So he went over to their home and he brought 6 goats with him. And he put them in the door, shut the door and left. A week later, he went back and he was greeted with a big smile by everyone. And they said, thank you. We have so much room that we don't know what to do with it. So instead of complaining, they were looking to the good. The kids had a lot of fun playing with the goats. So the pastor took the goats and gave them back to the farmer that he had borrowed them from. Shakespeare. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. The second quote that was recited earlier. Someone having a vision problem sent Mary Baker Eddy a letter. Said they couldn't find the solution to their vision problem. She wrote a letter back and said, are you able to focus no matter what comes your way? That's the way to solve a vision problem. On what are we focusing? Are we doing our duty and discerning the difference between right and wrong, mortal and immortal, spiritual and material? Are we able to focus on the spiritual? If we think we're out of money or don't have a house to live in? Are we being grateful for everything we've received from everyone? And I'm referring the spiritual ideas in our study. Are we grateful for every character in the book? The book being the Bible. Are we grateful for what Mary Baker Eddy devoted to the world, which was her entire being, in order to provide us science and health with key to the scriptures? Jesus had a half a dozen people out of the tens of thousands that he taught. Remember, they did not count women and children. So when it said he taught 4,000 one time and 5,000 another for 9,000 total, he probably taught 5 or 6 times that much. And he's the one that said he loves to teach children because they are receptive to what he tells them. So they're the ones that probably learned the most and they weren't even counted. So there's probably 50 or 60,000 that he taught. He raised Lazarus and Tabitha. Did they show up? Mary Magdalene showed up. His mother showed up. And John the disciple showed up. And 2 or 3 others. How many showed up for Mary Baker Eddy? The board of directors forbid the ones living in her home to even mention her name and don't write anything and give to the public about what you learned while you were in there. They accepted it instead of fighting for Mary Baker Eddy. So she had no one show up. No one. When they tore down all of her statues, did anyone complain? Or did they just turn the other cheek, forget it? She had no one that came. No one. We have a choice in how we use our moments. We only have one chance to use the moment. Tomorrow it's gone. We can work twice as hard tomorrow, but we can't get back what we lost. We could have worked twice as hard anyway and be that much further ahead. We need to get an appreciation of what time management is all about. How much time are we devoting to our study of something that could give us a brand new life, transform us into something that we never even dreamed of how to describe it? We tell you how to do it. You have to go to our website and click on the link that says Heal Everything. That's in it. That's on every page up at the top in the header. Heal Everything. One click takes you there. We give you the formula. Joel Goldsmith was called to go to the Benevolent Association, which is a Christian Science nursing home, because somebody was ill and needed his help badly. When he entered the reception area, the receptionist said, "Why are you here?" And he told her. And she said, "You can't go in there. Everybody in the entire building is sick. And it's contagious. If you go in there, you're going to come out with the same problem." He inquired as to how many people were there. She told him it was a lot. A lot of people. Everyone ill. The nurses and everyone. She implied that we have this many problems. He said, "You only have one problem." And he went over and sat down to be quiet on his own. A few minutes later, the nurses started coming out to the reception area and they said, what happened here? Everyone is healed all at the same time. We have the works of Wentworth Winslow, who raised a boy from the dead. Joel Goldsmith, that I just described his success. Frederick L. Rawson, who discovered how to heal back in time so that the healing took place when the problem first occurred. And so all the events that took place regarding that memory disappeared from the individual's thought. He also gave us a book entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, which lists 1,315 different ailments and how to solve every one of them. We recommend that you don't read that chapter from beginning to end, because then it will only suggest to you the names of all these problems. Just look up the problem that you want to solve. We have all of his writings. We have all of the tools so you can advance as much as you want to advance. And we tell you exactly how to do it. And you're going to be surprised. I'm not going to tell you. You got to look it up and read it detail by detail. But it will work. Guaranteed it will work. those who were living in Mary Baker Eddy's home, and also those who attended her final class in the Metaphysical College in 1898, received a CSD, for Doctorate of Christian Science degree. And she gave them seven prayers, kind of like Jesus. Jesus gave one prayer out of his tens of thousands of people that he must have healed. She gave us seven short prayers. She says you should repeat them often. She gives you word by word, very short. She calls them the diapason of heaven. One is a focus on mind, another one on spirit, another one on principle, soul, life, truth, and love. Seven prayers. Oh, another one you should remember is Helen Wright. She was the founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. As a matter of fact, just go to our website and look in the header. And we have some of the top people there. And there's like three places to click. You can click on their name or their photograph or on the text that is associated with them that is right below their picture. And it'll take you to three different places, all related to the individual. I will give you one clue. You can't get anywhere that is of lasting value unless you understand the value of developing a life of giving. Because a giving attitude is the only way you can build up credits. And a credit is the only thing that has an everlasting value. So if you want to start building instead of tearing something down, you've got to switch from a focus on things that you think are important, such as a money, a house, whatever, and think about the spiritual values, which are qualities. Someone that was very wise and successful in Christian Science healing said, "Qualities, qualities, all are qualities." That's the only thing that exists, are qualities. The entire vocabulary of the English language can be divided into what is this quality in this word. And it's either a good quality or it's the opposite. If it's the opposite, then you flip it. Okay, well, what's the opposite of this? And that's the quality you want to focus on. It's kind of like one of the most successful salesmen said. He said, take your dictionary and cut out every word that is negative. I think you need to have two dictionaries because you're going to cut out what's on the other side. That's what he said. Cut it out of your vocabulary. Cut it out of your dictionary. Cut it out of your thought, speech, and action. Only focus on good, like Mary Baker Eddy did every hour. Are we willing to do that? Are we willing to take 5 minutes or 3 minutes or even 1 minute every hour to remind ourselves to only focus on good with everyone and everything in our thought? When we do, that's the beginning process. John Morgan, another excellent Christian Scientist, he said, you can't even begin to know about God until you realize that your life has been futile focusing on something besides God. So if you want to learn about God, you got to realize, first of all, what I just said. repeating his words. All of the tools that you need are on the Mary Baker Eddy Institute website, which is called mbeinstitute.org. And the first minute of this prayer treatment told you how to communicate with us. Be very happy to hear from anyone that has any questions about anything. I will close with one of the seven treatments that she gave us that are entitled The Diapason of Heaven. And that will be the termination of this extemporaneous prayer treatment on the topic of debit and credit. Diapason of Heaven with a focus on love. Declare often, love is my God, and my God is love. Good is my God, and my good is love. Love is my God, and my love is good. Love is my principle, and my principle is love. Love is the law of my being. Divine love is enthroned in my consciousness as my God. This is the Word of God. Amen. It is May 22 at 15:28 in the year 2025. The end.